Script of Dialogue Conspiracy. That's a long time. 78 hours of programs on 78 different weekends.
You know, it sounds familiar.
Freedom of hell.
It's a long time. Long time. There are a lot of late-breaking stories. The Watergate story breaks so quickly that, well, it's hard to know whether you're on top of the latest developments. But some developments this past week concerning John Schmitz and some people that have surfaced in front of him and in front of the nation concerning the Arthur Bremer affair. And the attempted assassination of George Wallace, and there is, like we said, the Watergate affair. Developments concerning campaign contributions to the Republican re-election effort.
Watergate cape, because it's the cover story for something which is very, but the tone is a calm back east, syndicate calm. Do you know where she comes from, Robin Adair Smith? Do you know what city?
No, I don't.
We're getting letters.
Robin Adam Sloan.
Adam Sloan.
Where'd you get that name, Robin Adair Smith? That must be Freudian or something.
I don't know. I'm tired. I've been working all week. I'm up in San Francisco. I did two radio shows that are really good. And one was from 10 to 2:30, KSFX. And the other one was KSAN, KSAN.
KSAN. Our friends at KSAN.
Going out to the city, reaching out with the information from Carmel up there.
What kind of reaction did you have to people in the city?
Really good. They were buying realists at the city lights up there at the bookstore. They've sold 500 copies already of the realist in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. The Thunderbird now has the realist. If the listeners want to go in there, there's a three-part article that I have on my research on the Watergate Hotel and on how Richard Nixon came to power and the American Assassin. They're all related. There's a linear connection going between all of them. And
I'd ask you to explain, but that would take the whole hour.
I'll
get you on something else.
You should
mention how the Robin Adams Sloan came up, because we just threw that out at the beginning of this program.
Oh.
There is a column. It's a question and answer column published by a syndicated columnist called by the name of Robin Adams Sloan. And the column apparently is called Personalities Plus. And somebody wrote from a PL in Carmel, California, wrote asking if she knew anything about a woman who broadcast a program called Dialogue Assassination, which has since been changed to Dialogue Conspiracy. That's dated somewhat. And the person PL in Carmel says, is she a nut or what?
And what was the answer?
The answer was, you're talking about Mae Brussel, who was a housewife with five kids when President Kennedy was assassinated in 63, and it goes on to describe various efforts you have, and said the program is on KLRB in Carmel, and she may be starting a periodical called Conspiracy Newsletter, and the fact that the radio station was mentioned in some of the newspapers in which this was published has prompted us to be the reciprocal for letters. You've got some of them in your hand.
Yeah.
From Illinois, Washington, D.C., New Jersey.
Yeah, I got one today from Boston.
Even from as far away as Monterey, California.
Who didn't know? They didn't know about
the program was on the air.
Yeah, Virginia. I got some at home from Virginia and Boston and Illinois, and they just sent them to Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. And people, with a little bit of exposure, people would get interested in the conspiracy theory we talk about out here on the West Coast, but there's no other city in the United States that has a show like this. So, but the article, The Real, is branching out and information spreading, hopefully reach some more states around. The headlines this week were apropos of the title. The article I wrote was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, the story of Martha Mitchell and her kidnapping at the Watergate Hotel. Why was she kidnapped? And a lot of people think that was funny or that I did it in jest, because The Realist is a magazine with cartoons and satire. But the article is very serious, and after you read it, you realize the nature of it, the tone of it. And the implication was that if Martha Mitchell was physically kidnapped, actually injured and kidnapped by members of the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, hired employees of that committee, then it indicated how far a fascist state can go in this country without people even being aware of it. And if they do this to Martha Mitchell, who's part of the game in the system, what would they do to the rest of us? So the article, The Realist, you all can get it at the Thunderbird Bookstore. You read it there.
What about people that are listening in the Santa Cruz area? Any?
The bookstore in Santa Cruz has it. There's a bookstore in Santa Cruz that carries The Realist.
You know which one? It's Bookshop Santa
Bookshop.
Cruz.
Bookshop
Santa Cruz on the Pacific Avenue Garden Mall.
And today, not today, it was the Thursday's paper about the Chronicle and the San Jose Mercury. Maury Hill all had articles about Martha Mitchell and her treatment, that she recognized the guard who knocked her down at the hotel. She was staying in California at Newport Beach the weekend of June 17th. And that weekend, she was calling on the telephone to tell somebody, Helen Thomas from UPI, something that she heard at the Watergate Hotel. And the guard took the telephone and yanked it from the wall and went in her daughter's bedroom, her daughter's 12 years old, and yanked that phone from the wall. And he knocked her, she said, through the window. The guard, his name is Mr. King, and she says that he just, Steve King, and she says that he knocked her through a plate glass window. And she identified the man who did all this, and he held her down while she got an injection against her wishes. She said very clearly, against my wishes. They threw me down, and they kicked me with his rubber shoes. He kicked me, and she had 6 stitches in her middle finger and 5 stitches on her ring finger. And her fingers are still stiff and may be permanently stiff, and her finger, her wedding ring, doesn't fit. My little sweetheart, as Mitchell referred to her, got her wedding ring finger smashed by his security guard. And she was kept prisoner for 24 hours. She couldn't see anybody or have any food. Her daughter was taken out for food, and then the attendant that was taking care of her daughter disappeared with the particular agent who knocked her down and did all the kicking. Martha Mitchell said it was the most bizarre thing. It was worse than the Watergate affair. Well, if Richard Nixon asked the Democrats not to open up a lawsuit about the Watergate affair until after his election because it would damage his campaign. So you can imagine if the Martha Mitchell thing is worse than the Watergate. And it is worse because at the Watergate, you have 5 men arrested planting bugging devices and taking pictures of personal documents or Democratic Party documents and picking up conversations and maybe using them for blackmail or planting evidence against them. That's serious. But on the other hand, you have Martha Mitchell, the wife of the ex-attorney general who left that job to be the head of the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon, who have her in a hotel room, and she's out in California, and it's the night that the robbery broke through, the breakthrough at the Watergate, and one of the men arrested was employed by her husband in the committee, James McCord. Now, she says that when she called for help and realized something was happening, John Mitchell wasn't around. He wasn't around for 24 hours. So in my article, The Realist, I talk about the fact that Patrick Gray III, the acting head of the FBI, was staying at the same hotel as John Mitchell, and both denied that they knew the other one was staying there. But if John Mitchell didn't visit with Patrick Gray, and he wasn't with his wife, where was he at the time for 24 hours? Does he usually stay away 24 hours on a resort vacation? So if this man is lying as the head of the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon, and the new acting head of the FBI, I also mentioned, I keep referring to The Realist article, how Patrick Gray shouldn't be allowed to be head of the FBI. He doesn't investigate anything. He closes the investigation. So that man was with John Mitchell at the time the other men employed by Mitchell's committee were arrested. And Martha Mitchell didn't see her husband 24 hours, and then we don't know how she ended up in New York. But she was actually kidnapped, and the title of my article, it was completed June the 13th. And this is already September, and it was just September the 14th. July 13th is when I finished it. 2 months later, she called the press, the Washington Star, because she wanted them to know that she's not an alcoholic or a mental patient. That is the system of putting down a person who knows too much, like Dita Beard. I said she's getting the Dita Beard treatment. It is. They're trying to discredit her. She said she's not alcoholic and she's not a mental patient. And the only reason she spoke up now, she said, I've kept my silence But the only reason she spoke up now is that somebody sent an article to Parade, you know, the magazine section of the newspaper, and asked about Steve King, the new head of the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, head of the security for that committee. And the article implied that he was not involved with Martha Mitchell's Watergate caper affair. And she called the Washington Star and said, yes, that he is the same man that knocked her down and caused her to have a shot in the behind. We don't know what fluid it was and when she ended up in New York, but she was actually kidnapped. And the intent of my article, even though it's in a funny magazine, a magazine filled with satire, is a serious article of how a police state can operate when somebody has seen too much, and she got the treatment. So we'll go on. One of the things I want to talk about, which worries me, is the War Council. We'll go back to the Watergate in a minute, but I call it the War Council. I've talked about a lot of things in the last 70 weeks or so, a year and a half, and made a lot of predictions about people being shot on the eve of their primary, like Wallace was shot, and we'll go to the Wallace thing in a minute. I made a lot of predictions, and I feel very uneasy about the signs in the news. A friend of mine called me this week and said, is there any good news? Tell us what we can do. Tell us about the good news. I wish I could.
People always ask me the same thing.
You want the good news?
Yeah, I never have any good news. I don't know what to tell them.
Well, I don't know what, the things that worry me are this. Richard Nixon wants to be elected the President of the United States, and the powers that be have sent him into that position and assume that he's going to look after their interests the next 4 years. They really don't want George McGovern. There's a certain set of war machine makers, industrialists, and international oil people that have selected Richard Nixon as the man to represent them, and they have a very mean campaign against George McGovern to put him down, discredit him, try to break his thing apart.
And they're the War Council?
The War Council. We're going to have another meeting of a War Council. Did you see the newscast? It's going to be at John Conley's ranch again, and the War Council is going to meet one more time, and I talked about that before on another show before, some heavy
no,
things.
No, they aren't actually called the War Council. That's the name you've given them, isn't
it? I give them the name the Poor Council. Let's talk about Richard, the signs that Richard Nixon's getting ready to move for something. I'm going to talk about the past meeting of the War Council, and I'm going to talk about what happened after they met. Richard Nixon is caught now. His committee is completely shattered. It looks good on the outside. John Mitchell has resigned. H. Gordon Liddy, the attorney for the White House staff that worked with Howard Hunter, the White House, is under arrest. The operation that they were involved in is locked up in the banking books temporarily now as of April the 7th. We don't have to see any money they had before, but that $10 million fund is sitting there, that $10 million secret fund, always on their mind that through some legal technicality they may have to subpoena or call that. Richard Nixon has Patrick Gray, the acting head of the FBI. He has no head of the FBI. He has Mr. Abrams as the head of the Pentagon, General Abrams. He's not appointed yet because of the Lavelle bombings. Hundreds of people knew that our country was bombing North Vietnam at the time we had the peace treaty going on, Paris peace talks. We assured North Vietnam we weren't bombing. A man was doing it on his own, and everyone else was covering it. And General Lavelle, at the hearings this week, said Abrams knew, General Abrams knew I was bombing. And Abrams says he didn't. And the congressional committee said I didn't expect both of them to tell the same story. We don't have a head of the Pentagon. We don't have a head of the FBI.
Well, head of the Joint Chiefs, right?
Joint Chiefs, yeah. We don't have the head of the Joint Chiefs. We don't have a head of the FBI. We only have these temporary people. And we have Mr. Klein that's in the Justice Department who is suspect, watched all the time because of the ITT thing and his other positions.
So there's a displeasure with the situation?
And Maurice Stans, the Secretary of Commerce, is named in a criminal suit. It's a civil suit, a criminal suit, for his involvement in the financing and funding of the Watergate.
So can you look into a crystal ball and see what this War Council is going to do when they meet?
Without these heads of states going and watching the history board like a chessboard, the way they move, I see five things which I don't like. because I don't think Nixon has anywhere to go. I don't think his Watergate can go too far. There was an article in the, it was a paper in New York City, I'll think of it in a minute, that Mr.
There aren't many left.
Mr. Greenwich, the Village Voice.
Village Voice, okay.
Yeah, Mr. Gonzalez from the locksmith shop is back down in Miami, and he was interviewed about his position in the locksmith shop and his arrest at the Watergate, and they said, how come you're down here now? He said, I've been assured there'll be no trial. Bernard Barker's back down in Miami, business as usual. And I think of these five signs that worry me as of this week. One is that Henry Kissinger, the big man all along, is very quiet. He's moving back and forth, Russia, China, nothing specific, staying out of the headlines, making deals like mad. Boeing airplanes going to China, PepsiCo to Russia, wheat to China, wheat to Russia. What can we do for you? And I worry because last year, or a year and a half ago, China and Russia both came out with articles on the Kennedy assassinations. Mao Tse-tung had an article passed through Mexico. The truth hasn't been told about the Kennedy assassinations. Sputnik, the Soviet Union, printed articles about Lyndon Johnson and the involvement of the government in killing Kennedy. And I felt at that time those were the blackmail or the hold they had on our government to not use atomic bombs in Asia. But if they could make a deal on trade, back and forth, they may give Vietnam to Nixon to play around with to save face. The atomic fleet is moving in there this week. There's atomic warheads moving in. Kissinger's moving around. The intelligence reports this week said that if the war went on, it would go two more years. There'd be too much unrest in this country, stretching this thing out with the prisoner wars. And if we go 2 years, we'll lose the war. We're not going to go two more years to lose, because we're losing it now. And the Vietnamese wouldn't give Richard Nixon the one thing he needed to win the election, which was peace. You know, they have escalated instead of bowing down, because if he could say he was the man who got the peace for the country, he'd be his election campaign would be much stronger. He hoped to have it. And Nixon is not beyond using atomic bombs over there if he wants. And they're using everything else but. And I'm really afraid, and I've read some things out of Europe in different journals, and the way the ships are moving in and Kissinger's moving in and our domestic scene is falling apart, I'm really worried about. Now, Charles Colson, last week I read a memo at the White House, remember? And I wondered what it was about elections. He's the top aide at the White House and the liaison.
Wants his staff to work 24 hours a day.
That's right. He's the liaison of the CIA and the far right wing to Richard Nixon. He said, election 71 days away. A day is 24 hours, 7 days a week. You're not to leave your desk or place unless I know where you are. You're either reached by phone or page. You're not to take any time off. You're to go nowhere without telling me. You can't speak without telling me. And he was a very stern list of orders. And at the time I questioned, remember, Phil, is this the way you run an election? He said, maybe on a Sunday. You might have a Sunday off, so I wonder if the war would escalate on Sunday, if the day Sunday had a meaning in the message of Colson. He's tied in with Premier Key and the far right wing, you know.
Colson's tied in with
Key. Oh, yeah, the CIA and he helped arrange with Carl McIntyre to bring Premier Key from Vietnam over here, and then the citizens protested so much at Premier Key that he was disinvited. But
so what is this war council going to do when they finally meet?
I don't know. I hope.
So-called war council. They're going to
I give them the name war council. Those are the powers that be. I got the idea from that book, Penn Jones' book, Forgive My Grief. And he describes, it's volume three of that book, he describes the meeting at the home of Clint Merchants and the oilmen and J. Edgar Hoover and Richard Nixon, November 22nd, 1963. And he said they met for final plans for the assassination the next morning of John Kennedy, that it was the most important decision for the United States of America besides the Normandy invasion. I don't like to repeat, you know, on these shows, I've tried to keep them always different, but I've mentioned this about two different times. I mentioned it once I read it in lieu of Nixon being in Dallas the day of the morning of the assassination the night before. And I repeated once before in May of this year when there was a barbecue at John Conley's Ranch. And I said to my radio listeners, now, this is pretty heavy. The guest list isn't published, but President Nixon, President Johnson, and John Connally are meeting down there. And I could just see that some pretty heavy things could come out of that meeting at that particular time, because you have to know how busy they are and what's going on, that they should come down at that time. Well, a few days later, after their barbecue down there, I think it was a matter of two or three days, J. Edgar Hoover was dead. He was found dead in his home in the morning when the maid came to work, completely unattended, although the FBI were supposed to have, besides the armored car, around-the-clock guards. No one was there. He was unattended, and no autopsy. He was removed and buried. A few days later than that, on May the 12th, Patrick Gray III, 9 days later, was appointed acting head of the FBI. He is a Nixon man who gave up a job as an officer in the Marines. He went to Annapolis to run Nixon's campaign in 1960. He's been very friendly with Richard Nixon's political career since he left Annapolis, and all of a sudden, from nowhere, no one's heard of him. He's never been in the FBI building in his life. He walks and he said, he didn't know how many departments or anything. He says, now I'll take over. There's going to be a lot of changes. And that was on May the 12th. On May the 16th, George Wallace was shot. And we'll go back after I finish this little bit on the War Council to show the kind of investigation that Patrick Gray does of the Wallace murder, and certainly no investigation of J. Edgar Hoover's
attempted death. Wallace murder.
Attempted. Oh, I'm sorry. I just put him there as one of the cases that's researched. I keep forgetting. It's terrible that he lived, because I think of Bremer as an assassin, as the alleged or would-be assassin.
Would-be assassin.
So on the ranch barbecue was the weekend of May the 1st, and on the 3rd, J. Edgar Hoover was dead, and on the May 12th, Gray was the head of the FBI, and the May 16th, the George Wallace was shot, which was a flagrant conspiracy that was never investigated. And then the next day, on May the 17th, John Connally resigned as Secretary of the Treasury, which was an important job. You see, they're realigning the power. Mitchell stepped down, Connally stepped down. Connally then began traveling all over the world with messages for various oil companies. And this is why I think the power is Secretary Rogers, Secretary of State Rogers, and John Connally and Ronald Reagan were sent all around the various embassies where we can't send memos anymore. You know, it's by diplomatic pouch.
Did you say when this War Council meeting is?
Well, this new barbecue was in the paper today. I think it's going to be, it was in the paper Thursday, sometime this week, I don't remember the date, this next weekend or the weekend after, that
so
Nixon and Connally
are
going down to Texas and have a meeting. And it has to be a serious meeting, because we go back to the funding of the Watergate in a few minutes. In the article, I mentioned the funding probably going to the bank of Bernard Barker could come from the city of Houston, Texas, where the CIA funded a lot of money to kill John Kennedy. And just by coincidence, the money in Bernard Barker's bank came from Houston, Texas. See, I wrote that in July. The cutoff date was July 13th. And posed the question, have you looked in Houston, because that would be a good bank location.
I remember you asking that question, saying that Texas seemed to be a good source of money.
So we'll do that story in detail about the banking and the financing, but I want to go into Patrick Gray a minute because of this newsletter you had over the wire service this week. But at the time that Wallace was shot on June the 1st, from Gutenberg, Germany. There's a conspiracy newsletter put out by Joe Justine. And he said the shooting of George Wallace was nothing but the eye-catching prelude to a far more important act of devilry planned by the CIA to save the Nixon maladministration from disaster. Now, that was June the 1st, before the Watergate even exposed them. It was a diversionary maneuver, Justine said, of wide scope designed to throw off the American public in advance so they won't recognize the hallmarks of the second coup d'etat now in the making. Joe Justine is a man from Germany who saw the rise of Hitler, left when Hitler came to power, and came back later, who came right to Dallas after Kennedy was killed and wrote the very first book on the assassination called Oswald, Assassin or Fall Guy. And he's written six books on the Kennedy assassinations, and he writes continuous books on the one on Chappaquiddick and Ted Kennedy's accident. And one on, he's in a book on Lyndon Johnson and Marina Oswald, and one on Robert Kennedy. So he talks about Wallace's shooting as just a planned accident. The intent was to kill Wallace, but it's just a preview of what was to come. So he has, this was in June, that he felt by fall, if there was any chance, you know, that Nixon would lose, that we were going to have the second big coup. And that was June the 1st that he wrote that. And June the 17th was the break at the Watergate Hotel. And then I wrote my article, which went to print 3 weeks later, that this was the team that could overthrow the country, that could do the coup d'etat that Justine was talking about. That news thing on Bremer, what was that on your wire service this week?
I think you
still have that. The one on Arthur Bremer?
Let's see here. I think I, there it is.
Oh, yeah.
We're organized, folks. Bear with us. Well, you want me to read through this?
Okay. Well, the part that's
from,
interesting.
From UPI, UPI, United Press International. The presidential candidate of the American Independent Party charges that there is a conspiracy of silence surrounding the government's investigation of Arthur Bremer and the shooting of Governor George Wallace. John Schmitz, the outgoing Republican congressman from California, has demanded a congressional inquiry into the case. Schmitz told a news conference that he has asked the House Internal Security Committee to investigate allegations in a magazine article that there was a communist conspiracy to kill the Alabama governor, and the CIA might also be involved. Schmitz said, and we quote here, "A charge that there has been a conspiracy of silence regarding the evidence showing the repeated association of Bremer with communists and revolutionary militants in Milwaukee," end quote. Schmitz was flanked at the conference by Alan Stang, S-T-A-N-G, author of the article in the October issue of American Opinion, and Timothy Heinen, H-E-I-N-A-N, who said he was an undercover operative for the Milwaukee Police Department while attending Marquette University from 1968 through June 1970. Stang said in the article that his own investigation of the Wallace shooting showed it was a communist conspiracy. Stang added, "It could well involve agents of communist China, and the Central Intelligence Agency might have had something to do with it." Schmitz stopped short of outright endorsement of Stang's conclusions, but said he would put the entire article in the congressional record and said he wanted the committee to investigate Stang's findings.
Maybe we should put the Watergate about the tax allegations in the congressional record. This is an interesting thing how the Bird Society works. I take the American Opinion, and they come up with a certain amount of information, but if you lead them to new information, they block out and won't pursue it. In other words, Patrick Gray III is the acting head of the FBI, and he is a very arch-conservative, law and order, violently anti-communist gentleman. And he was in on the arrest. Arthur Bremer went to the hospital with some stitches, and they called the White House, is it all right? And they said, yes, if he's under the control of the FBI. So the FBI took over, and the local Maryland police were simply furious that they didn't get a chance to take care of that case. And the FBI covered it up. We've talked about this in other shows. So if communists were involved with Arthur Bremer and Patrick Gray hides them, then Patrick Gray is hiding communists. The Birch Society should ask for the removal of Patrick Gray if he isn't doing an investigation. Now, I believe that there is a conspiracy of silence. I agree with this particular press conference and his information. I believe there should be a congressional inquiry into the shooting of Wallace. I think the internal security group can look into the allegations that he went to three communist meetings, but they should also look into the fact that he stayed at the Waldorf Astoria, or he stayed at the Lord Elgin, where a CIA agent was at the time he was in Canada. There are two researchers in the Dallas, in Dallas, that have worked on the John Kennedy murder for 9 years or 8 years, and they're arch-conservatives and members of the Birch Society. Her name's Mary Farrell, and the other is Arch Kimbrough. Kimbrough's a graduate of West Point. And they started working years ago for all the communist leads that Oswald went to the communist meetings, that Oswald was a member of the Communist Party, or he took communist subscriptions. And they were determined, for the sake of America, to find everything that mentioned Oswald's CIA communist, not the CIA, the Communist Association. And the reason they've never published an article, or you've never known about those two people, and they have a whole wing of a house like a computer operation, card files on witnesses that were before the commission. The reason you never hear from those people is they couldn't find one communist. And mostly they found CIA or FBI involved. And so they can't use their work. They're not they're about to tell you, you see, and they work and work and collect information. Now, Arthur Bremer may have gone to three communist offices before he was hired to shoot Wallace. But the money didn't come from the communists. It's just to lose the traces. They did this with Oswald. And the point, I wish once and for all that they would work for a full congressional opening of the thing and get all the evidence out. But that would be impossible. It would go back again to the same cycle. There's no way.
Okay, we're sort of at a halfway break here.